A little turn of loving on a Mason Dixon.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on what's left of this Friday morning. Text line, you want to be in touch with the show, 251-343-0106. Time permitting, we'll get to whatever is remains of our text correspondence. Joining us now, he is our returning champion. You hear him this time every week on FM Talk 106.5, but State Senator Chris Elliott is here with us. Senator, how are you?
I am doing great. Glad to be out of Montgomery. It was a long week.
Yeah, and you guys are being spared the real eternal strife, but maybe it's not as evident as it is downstairs in the House. But relative to that, I mean, things seem to be going okay. Well, give us an assessment of the legislative session to date.
Well, look, I think we've got, you know, a list of certainly kind of caucus priorities that we're moving through. And then there are some member priorities that obviously are important. Pro Tem and his staff are doing a really good job managing the flow of legislation on the floor. I've seen a lot of, you know, Senate bills pass in the House already, and a lot of House bills pass in the Senate already. And I think things have worked out pretty well. I do think, you know, last session with the clock management issues, we'll call them, that we had in general, there were a lot of pieces of legislation that were left over, if you will, that have made a comeback, and most people are familiar with those pieces of legislation. And so with it being the fourth year of the quadrennium, we've seen some things that have, you know, been around for a while. And so there's a level, again, of comfort with them, and they're moving through the process well. So all in all, I'm pretty pleased. It's how it should work.
Well, that's my perception of the Senate, that, you know, and you can tell me if it was accurate, that we're really getting kind of what we expected, tie up some loose ends, and, you know, no real big surprises otherwise, because we haven't had a true fourth year of a quadrennium. I've been arguing this since 2018. I felt like 22, you had to do some catch up because of the lost COVID year. And Right. Now this session, you know, maybe upstairs it is applicable, but certainly not in the House. And certainly not with that, the PSC bill. And we know the pro tem has come out and said that it's just not now. It was too fast, too sudden. But, I mean, what is that sort of true with you guys in the upper chamber?
Yeah, I think everybody is feeling really comfortable, and the pro tem has been doing a really good job. And we're all, you know, 27 individuals in the Republican caucus, and certainly 35 individuals total in the Senate, and everybody's kind of got their own priorities, but the pro tem has done a really good job managing that. We've added another kind of chairman's meeting that occurs Thursday after we adjourn to really kind of set the table for next, you know, for the following week. And so it's just a very reasonable, collaborative, adult, you know, way to function and manage the flow of information and how, you know, the hip bone connects to the leg bone, and planning on what the floor is going to look like and how that's going to work. And so I'm very pleased with how it's working. There's not anybody that what are we doing next week? How's this going to work? When is, you know, this particular piece of legislation going to come onto the floor? And oh, by the way, that extends to our Democratic colleagues as well, so that everybody knows what's happening and when it's happening. And you can just see the flow on the floor is much, much easier. And that's just information. We're not always going to be on the same page with our Democrat colleagues, far from it. But you know, them not always wondering what lurks around the corner is beneficial for everyone.
Let's talk about a couple of bills that have come up here in the last few days. I would say start out here, closing primaries, and it's, you know, it's something that's been discussed. The Alabama Republican Party has passed a resolution, or at least it's been in the discussion during their business meetings. But I get the sense this is something that if the speaker wanted to get it done downstairs, he could. Do you have any sense of what the Senate would look like on something like that?
You know, I think that's going to go through the legislative process. We haven't, you know, that bill just got filed yesterday, if I remember correctly. And so we'll have to take a look at it and see, you know, what the House does with it. I don't think there's a Senate companion for it, so I don't think there's a senator that's that's carrying it, at least yet, that's been identified. And so, you know, I certainly can't speak for the entire Senate. I know I've been part of those conversations in the past, but the details are important and the details matter. And we'll let the process work its way through and see what comes up from the House.
And then the other, the overtime tax, we've talked about it for the last few years, and it came and then it went away. Now there's another proposal out there. You got any sense of the reception to something like that?
Look, I've said before, the greatest way to limit the growth of government is to put it on a diet. And the way you do that is you limit the amount of money it has to do something. And so that in and of itself is a good thing. I am concerned. I looked at the bill when I heard about it, and it's fairly limited. Now that's good from a budget standpoint in that it doesn't reduce revenue by very much, but it caps the amount of non-taxable overtime at $1,000, if my reading of it is correct. And it does so for the 2025, 26, 27, fiscal years, and that's it. And so we'll find ourselves back in the same situation. It's effectively a sunset, if you will. And we'll find ourselves back in the situation, the same one we had before. So our budget chairs will be really happy that it's not going to reduce revenue by that much. But I'm not sure, my constituents that really liked that overtime exemption are going to be particularly thrilled that it's limited to only $1,000.
Well, what do you think is reasonable? Just across the board, is even in the realm of possibilities that you could do that and make it somewhat permanent, I guess, at least if you wanted to do away with it, it would require another act of the legislature. Is there any appetite for that?
Maybe. I worry about jerking around tax policy too much because people start planning on that, right? And we saw that with the initial overtime exemption when we said, hey, we're gonna wipe out the income tax on overtime. And so you saw employers going out and trying to figure out how to implement that and going through, quite some maturations to make payroll do that, if you will, and ensure that happened correctly. And as soon as they had that done, what happened? Poof, it went away, right? And you had people that were, taking jobs and paying attention to, oh, now we're not going to tax overtime anymore. And then what happened? It sunset, it went away, and we were right back to taxing overtime. And now here we are again, coming back in to say, oh, we're going to tweak it again, and it's going to be just the first $1,000. And so now, if this passes, and I have no reason to believe it shouldn't, right? It's a tax cut in an election year. But you're going to put those employers right back in the same spot where they're trying to figure out, okay, how do we implement this? We've got to make sure we cap this. And you've got employees making decisions, again, based on a policy that is not only going to set to expire in 2027. And so I appreciate the tax cut. We need to do that. We should have continued the previous overtime tax cut. I've just lived with the decrease in revenue. And like I said, put government on a diet. It's this, turning the wheel on the ship back and forth a whole lot that just creates, in my opinion, some confusion for employers and employees alike.
Well, let's talk about it on the other side. Obviously, putting government on a diet, starving the beast, and limiting the growth and scope of government. Government has grown in the state since, I guess, in almost every year, but one or two of the Ivey administration. But the economic impact are there tangible or what do we see like a tangible benefit to the Alabama's economy when we did this the first time around?
That's a good question. You have to go back and start and look at why the government, grew, because you're right, it did. And the majority of that growth came out of the Biden era, giveaway programs, right? The CARES Act, ARPA, IIJA, all of those types of things that really were gimme programs to the state. You can't very well expect the state not to take free federal money and go do whatever with it. And so we did. The good news is a lot of that was passed through in nature. The other benefit of that money was, while it's set in our accounts, the state's accounts, we earned interest of it to the tune of hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars each year. And we're about to, you know, come off of what our budget chairmen have, you know, called a sugar high, because that interest revenue will go away. But a lot of, you know, really worthy water projects and sewage projects and things of that have happened around the state. We've put in a lot of fiber optic cable. I don't know if we're going to really wonder if we should have done that or not, but we sure have. You know, I'm still working off my Starlink and perfectly happy with it. And I wonder if we're going to look at all this, you know, like we look at telephone cords later on, but we'll see. And so there are some real good projects that have happened with some of that federal money. What we tried to do, and I think what we're reasonably successful with doing, is limiting the amount of state dollars that increased significantly, and non-inflationary state dollars, and haven't grown positions too much, haven't grown the size of government, because we knew it was going to right size when the federal gravy train stopped. And so our budget chairman did a really good job preparing us for that.
Well, one thing, I think growth of government is tied to the value of the dollar and inflation. That you have bigger budgets because the value of the dollar's a lot less. Things are more expensive. It's more expensive to pay people, more expensive for goods and services that government needs to operate. But can you isolate that and just look at like where government has grown, aside from whatever CARES Act or ARPA money that's been put into the system and then put into that? But like we have new programs. Do we have bigger, more bloated bureaucracy? Are there things like that you see that have come out of this era, or is it just more of a function of the circumstances?
It's both. And I think that's a real astute observation, you know, that you're making there. A lot of it is inflationary. It's just the cost of things has gone up. And so it's a vicious cycle, and that the cost of things goes up. Most taxes are a percentage of cost, right? Or a percentage of value. And as the value or the cost goes up, the revenue associated goes up with it as well. So I'll give you an example. Per pupil education spending in Alabama has increased 47% in the last 10 years. Holy cow, that's a huge increase, right? 47% in the last 10 years.
Which is way more than inflation.
Right. Of course it is. And so is some of that inflationary? Yes, some of that is inflationary. But also some of that is a rollout of programs, everything from advancement in technology money to new programs that deal with numeracy and literacy acts, right, that are ensuring that our kids read and do math at grade level, and that if they don't, we provide the school with the resources to make sure that we turn around that school. And so we're doing that. You see additional funding in the way of CHOOSE Act dollars for school choice that just simply didn't exist before, right? And so those are new programs, and some could argue an increase in the size of government, but certainly everybody would also agree that, hey, it's working, right? School choice is a good thing. That's something that we want. That when you look at the Numeracy Act and the Literacy Act, hey, we want kids to read at grade level. We want them to do math at grade level. And we want, you know, to make sure that we are providing the support to those schools that need it, those teachers that need it, and those kids that need it. And if it costs more money, that's a good place where that 47% went. And so the answer to your question is both. It is new programs, but we have tried as much as possible to make sure they're very targeted, that they're effective, and there are metrics that we can measure to determine that that effectiveness. And hey, if it's not working, then pull back the program. And we've done some of that too.
And some of this obviously would predate you, I guess. I mean, I talked to Senator Orr about this, and he's the chairman of the education budget in the Senate. But like when the Republicans took over in 2010, they came into a situation where everything had been maxed out. The Democrats saw the writing on the wall, and ran the budgets down and put everything in sort of a financial disarray, and forced, you know, some prorationary policies and whatnot. And the way he describes it is, you know, yes, 40, as you say, that percentage of growth way outpacing inflation, and way outpacing even what would be perceived to be some of these new programs. But it was really bare bones when the Republicans took over, and everything's been kind of rebuilding since then.
It has been, and at the same time, you know, filling up the rainy day funds, paying off debt, you know, and making sure we have savings accounts that are there for when the economic downturn, you know, hits. But yes, the economy has grown under Republicans. Our economic development activities in Alabama have been, you know, are world renowned, right? I mean, we are the place to do business because of our business environment, and so that's how it's supposed to work. It is a recipe for success. And so what have we done? We've, you know, I'll go back to education again. We have invested, you know, almost $50 million out of a $200 million in a new medical school at the University of South Alabama. So there have been real important capital expenses that have come out of the legislature as well, and capital investments that you should do when things are good. But a lot of those are one-time expenses and not necessarily the growth of government overall. What I look at is headcount. What I look at is, you know, is how much recurring expense we have. But we do continue to see our Medicaid rolls in, you know, go down. We do continue to try to trim that and make sure that those types of things are kept under control as well, because we know that those types of entitlement programs are incredibly expensive and we need to keep them in check.
Senator, we're out of time. We got to leave it there, but I always appreciate you coming on. We'll do this all over again next week.
Thanks so much for having me. We'll be back in Montgomery at it next week.
All right. State Senator Chris Elliott there, our returning champion. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Yes, there were times, I'm sure.